Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Bhakti Bhai Bhava ki
jai.
Grantara Srila Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Jandikai Gopremana ki
jai.
Next we'll do some discussion on the 10 offences in chanting the holy name of Krishna. So we have some handouts here. So what we will do is this is a special lesson. It is a topical lesson. It's specifically about offences against the chanting of the holy name. There are 10 offences whilst chanting the holy name, which if you attend the morning program in ISKCON centers around the world, after Mangalati, after Tulsi Puja, you then recite the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name. So tonight we'll do a brief summary of those 10 offenses. These are based on the notes. This is based on teachings from the Harinam Chintamani by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So if you have any questions, you can ask them as we go. Now, the first part, which is called part one, is just a general summary of the glories of the holy name. We won't go over that tonight, so you can put that aside. You can read that in your own time. And we'll begin with lesson two, and we'll do lesson three also, which will discuss the glories of the holy name. Okay, so first offense. The 10 offences against the holy name. Haridas Thakur says, I am very fearful of these offences. Please give me the strength to avoid them, my Lord. Srila Haridas Thakur. So,
first offence. The blasphemy of the yogis will dedicate their lives to propagating the holy name of God. Offence completely disrupts one spiritual life. A. The Sadhu has 26 qualities. One is the Swarup Lakshana, essential quality, and the other is the Tatastha Lakshana, all of the qualities. Krishna, Ika, Sharan, Swarinda, Rodhi, and Krishna is the Swarup Lakshana. The external designations of Parnasham are not the symptoms of the Sadhu. Only surrender to Krishna and perfection to the Holy One. One should not disrespect the sadhu if the tatastha, that is the good qualities, are not present in his character. Sadhu Ninda includes criticism of caste, accidental fallout, last presence of previous sin, or sin after becoming a devotee. Asat Sangha causes one to disrespect the sadhus. Asat Sangha is of two types, being attached to women or men attached to women. Associating with Mayavadis, pretenders or athletes. B. There are three levels of devotees. The Kanishka, Madhyama and Uttama Adhikaris. The Madhyama Adhikari always serves the sadhus. If we offer the sadhus, bhakti will leave us and we will never have a taste for chanting the holy name. The degree of our offenses is according to the level of advancement that the devotee will offer. One must fall to the feet of the Vaishnava. One is offended, he is in one's eyes and beg forgiveness. The Vaishnava will be very merciful, will embrace us and breathe us of the offenses.
Okay. So, there are 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy name. Now, in the morning, after the Tulsi Puja, we read or we recite the 10 offenses. Now, when we recite the 10 offences, this is based on Srila Prabhupada's list in the Nectar of Devotion. And the way we recite them is that at the end of reciting the 10 offences, we say, and it is also an offence to be inattentive whilst chanting. That is considered to be like an 11th offence. But in Haridas Thakur's list, in the Nectar of in the Harinam Chintamani, then, offence 5 and 6. Offence 5 is to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be imagination. And 6 is to...
Use some interpretation of the holy name.
to give some interpretation on the holiness. So these are very similar, these two. So in Harinanda Chaitanya, these two are really merged into one offense. And to be inattentive while chanting, that is counted as one of the 10 offenses in chanting. So in this list you'll see it's within the 10 offenses. Now, out of the 10 offenses, the first offense and the third offense are directly connected. The first offense is to?
Yes.
Blasphemy in the devotees. So it is Kutsatu Ninda. Or Vaishnava Aparada. The third offense is Guru Avagya, which means to disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Now, when you disobey the orders of the spiritual master, you will be disconnected from the internal energy. Mahatmana to Mamaparata, Devim, Prakritim, Ashrutaha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that the devotees are under the influence of the internal energy. That is how we make advancement in spiritual life, because we are taking shelter of the internal energy of Krishna. Now, when you disobey the order of the spiritual master, then the internal energy withdraws its effect or its mercy upon you. So then you become overcome with the material energy. And as a result, then you may begin to offend devotees. So you see, when devotees, they stop following the orders of the guru, then they may become critical towards other devotees because they're no longer in the internal energy. And similarly, that if one commits offences to devotees, the same thing happens. Then the internal energy, it withdraws, one becomes absorbed in the external energy once again, and then one will not have the strength to follow the orders of the spiritual master. So if you disobey the orders of the spiritual master, or if you offend devotees, then it will be very hard to follow the other principle. In other words, if you break number one, then number three will be hard to follow. If you break number three, number one will be hard to follow. Now, of the 10 offenses, it says the remedy for overcoming offense number one and number three, which is to disobey the order of the guru and to disobey the Vaishnavas or to offend the Vaishnavas. The way to overcome these two offenses is to go to the guru or to go to the Vaishnava that you have offended and to beg forgiveness. And if you beg forgiveness from the guru or the Vaishnava, they will forgive you and then your offense will be mitified or nullified. It will be destroyed. The other eight offences, number two, number four till ten, the other eight offences, they are overcome by cultivation of knowledge. In other words, when you have proper jnana. When you have a proper understanding, then you will not commit these offences. Because what is the second offence? We'll read that soon. To consider the names of demigods, like Lord Shiva, like Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu. So if you have knowledge, you won't commit this offence, because you have proper siddhanta or proper understanding. Right? If you understand the tattva properly, then you cannot commit this offence. So the other eight are overcome by cultivation of proper knowledge. And if we commit the other two offences, then we must approach the personality who we have offended, they will forgive us. Okay. Now, the sadhu is one who is surrendered to Krishna. So you see there are 26 qualities of a devotee. Of the 26, the Swarup Lakshana, the most important quality is Krishnaita Sharana, which means the devotee is surrendered to Krishna. This is the principal quality of a devotee. Devotees are surrendered to Krishna. Now if one is surrendered to Krishna, the other 25 qualities will manifest to some degree. But in different devotees it will be different. Not every devotee will show the same amount of those other qualities, the secondary qualities. But that in every devotee, that principal quality will be easily seen. In other words, what is the main quality of the devotee? He is surrendered to Krishna. That is the principal quality. The other qualities, an example given is that one of the 25 other qualities is mridu. Mridu means soft, yeah, mild, very soft like that, mild in one's behaviour. Now, if you look at the Pandavas, Bhima Sen was a pure devotee. Yudhishthira was also a pure devotee. Yudhishthira was very mild. Bhima Sen was not mild. So we cannot judge Bhima upon him being mild, or Yudhishthira being mild, or Bhima being not mild. Right? Because you can't say, oh, Bhima is a better devotee than Yudhishthira. You can't say, they're both a pure devotee. So it is the surrender to Krishna which is the principal quality. The other qualities will manifest differently according to the type of devotee. Some devotees will have a particular quality, others will not, but they all fully surrender to Krishna. So that is the principal quality that we look for when we identify a devotee. We say, oh, this person is surrendered to Krishna. Right. Now, sometimes devotees have defects. Right. Hands up if you've noticed that sometimes devotees have defects. Okay, hands up if you have defects. Okay. Hands up if you see sometimes some of the other devotees have defects. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes devotees have defects. You know, sometimes we do things which are not proper. Right? So if the devotee does something which is not proper, right, and we see some defect in that devotee, that will be there, but we will see that the main principle is the surrender to Krishna. That is the main principle. Every devotee will have some defect in it. Now, according to here, we see in the Harinam Chintamani that Haridas Thakur, he explains you may have certain types of defects in devotees. And he gives a list of the different types of defects which are there. Right? So he says, a sadhu ninda includes criticism of caste. So you'll say, oh, this person is of a lower caste. Especially in India, this is very prevalent. You'll say, oh, this devotee is from a Sudra caste. I am from a Brahmana caste. Now, my family is a Brahmana. So these devotees, they're from a Sudra caste. So then you will begin to judge them externally. And this is sadhu ninda. This is offensive. Even like I went to Fiji a few years back, about nearly 20 years ago, and the devotees told me that in one particular temple there, the South Indian devotees and the North Indian devotees did not speak to each other. So that's sadhu ninda. That is offensive. Oh, we won't speak to them because they're from North India. Right? And we won't speak to them because they're from South India. Right? So this is, what is the first teaching of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita? Right? You're not your body. Right? So a devotee does not judge according to external. So you see, oh, this person is like this, or this person is like that. That is completely external. And that is sadhu ninda. As soon as you say, oh, you know, these North Indian devotees or these South Indian devotees, or as soon as you put some material judgment on the devotee, that is sadhu ninda, that is offensive. Right? And then he says, because of accidental fall down. Just like in recent months, the GBC of Australia, he fell down from his position, left his sannyas ashram. So I was speaking to my good friend Ashok Krishna Prabhu, who is a prominent disciple of Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, who has left the movement, not left the movement, but has fallen down from his sannyas ashram recently. Right? But then, Atul and I were speaking yesterday, and he was telling me that Bhamana Swami wrote a letter to Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu, because they've been good friends for a number of years. And he said in that letter, I do not see you any differently now to what I did when you were a sannyasi. Bhamana Swami said, I don't see you any differently now to when you were a sannyasi. Right? Because he's above the materialistic platform of consciousness. Right? So if some devotee has an accidental fall down, it's just some temporary problem. And then you judge that person, and you criticize that person, and especially to other devotees, you go around and you say, oh, they did this and they did that, right? Then this is sadhu ninda. Right? And then that is an offense to the Vaishnava. Because the person is a great Vaishnava.
What if you see that
No, if it's in the mind. In Kali Yuga, there's no offences in the mind. Because if you got reactions to the offences in the mind, we would probably all be dead. We'd probably all be burnt to ashes by now. If all the funny thoughts that go in our head actually manifest, then we'd be in trouble.
Where did the listen go?
What?
The brain mind.
I don't know, but I hope it's true. I have no Shastric reference.
Sometimes we preach to people like a, some kind of like a, say okay, this is there are some Sikh movies in our movement as well. So we preach that community. So they saw we are Sikh. They don't they we have some Sikh movies. So what do you guys mean?
If you judge them for being Sikh.
No, we tell them we preach to some community, right? The community, they are in Sikhism, and we try to preach them, take them to Vrindavan. And then when we quote them, look, we have a member, there is two Sikh girls there, there is two Sikh boys there, like this. It's not in our way.
I don't think so. Sounds like that. I mean, you're not really a Sikh boy anymore.
Sikh?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I mean, you can say, yeah, we have people who have joined from that
movement. Sikhism, from the girls are there, the boys are there. Just justify them,
you can come, you can keep the religion as well. You can learn this one. Who do you want to check? You sure? You can have one little mic. Yeah, we have a special. Okay, so accidental fall down, last traces of previous sin. Last traces of previous sin means the devotee may still have some bad habits or bad qualities from before he was a devotee, or some tendency towards something before he was a devotee, but you don't judge because of that, just because there seems to be some defect in there. Just like sometimes we hear, just like one time I was sitting here and with one devotee, and after the Bhakti Bhai Bhava finished, and some other devotees were out there, and husband and wife were there, and they were speaking to each other, and I didn't understand because I don't speak the native languages. But then this devotee, Indian devotee who was with me, he started to laugh. And he said, oh, the wife is speaking very heavily to that husband. Like that. So that conversation, I did not understand it, but it may have been a little bit inappropriate because of past bad habits before we were devotees. We speak in such a way. Devotees should speak very pleasantly, especially the wife should speak very pleasantly to her husband. Wife should speak very pleasantly to the husband. It's okay. Bhagavatam. Ninth canto. When you hear about Sita Thakurani, then you'll see. Speaks very sweetly to the husband. Okay. They all nod. They all agree. But don't you say anything. Okay. Last traces of previous sin, or sin prior to becoming a devotee. So you cannot say anything about before the devotee joined ISKCON. Just like sometimes I hear devotees, just like I did not follow the regular principles before I became a devotee, right? I was eating meat, I was doing all sorts of things. So you cannot judge what the devotee did previous, because many of us did these things. We did not know. We were in ignorance like that, so we did it. So you can't say, oh, even sometimes I've heard devotees say, oh, they used to do these things. But they did not know. It is important what they have done since they became devotees. We all had defects, so this is Sattva Ninda. So, Haridas Thakur says, be very careful about offending devotees, about judging devotees. Who should we judge? Who should we criticize? Mainly we should judge ourselves. We should see what is the defect in ourselves. The other devotees, you should see the good qualities. Okay. So why do we commit offences? Why do we commit sadhu-ninda? It is because of asatsanga. Asatsanga means because we are associated with materialists or people who are non-devotees. By associating with non-devotees, your consciousness becomes contaminated, you begin to criticize devotees. And I see this, that's why you have to be very careful about associating with non-devotees. I see sometimes devotees, they begin to associate with the non-devotees for some reason, even though they may say it's for service or something, but they associate with them, but then they can become very critical towards the devotees. And it's not that devotees don't have faults, devotees do have faults. Our movement has faults. But you have to be very careful about criticizing. Unless you are in a position where you're meant to criticize, in other words, you're a senior Vaishnava, and your service is to criticize, then you have to be very careful. Otherwise, you may be committing sadhu-ninda, and it may impact on your spiritual life. So then, Haridas Thakur says, what is the remedy? One must fall down at the feet of the Vaishnava one has offended with tears in one's eyes and beg forgiveness. The Vaishnava, being very merciful, will embrace us and relieve us of this offense. So it means that if you commit an offense to a devotee, you have to go to that devotee, bow down at that devotee's feet, and have tears in the eyes and beg for forgiveness. What does it mean with tears in the eyes? This means you have to be sincere. Right? Even sometimes you see devotees, they come and they offer obeisance, but not really sincere. And the devotee has to forgive you. So sometimes if the offense is very serious, the devotee may not forgive straight away. So it actually says, in the Guru Kambi, if you offend a devotee, and the devotee is not satisfied even when you come to beg forgiveness, then you have to continuously serve that devotee. Serve them and serve them and serve them until they become pacified. Sometimes if the offense is very great, they may not forgive you straight away. Okay. So you just serve them and serve them and serve them, and then they will forgive you eventually. But if we beg for forgiveness from the devotees, it must be sincere. Not we're just doing it out of some formality. That's why it says with tears in the eyes. It must be with a sincere mentality. Okay, any questions so far?
In the course of our work, we associate with so many people. Normally, it's not that for that. So, what does the Sangha mean? The Sangha means to use the association of the people or simply associating with the people in the course of the work and not make a meaning?
No, it will affect you. Some effect happens. Just by being around them, you get affected. Because they're always talking about unnecessary things and, you know. So you will get affected by them.
So if we interact with them in the course of the work, but we do not entertain this type of physically having conversations, is it still a satsanga?
It's a satsanga, but you may not get affected by it. That means you don't have to get affected by it. The warning here is that you may get affected by it. You don't have to get affected. We get affected to some degree because it's very contaminated. But Srila Prabhupada says once a year you should go to Mayapur, Vrindavan, you should take baths, far from the Ganges, like that, just to purify yourself.
So
what
happened in our Thakur says we it's not considered association, it's not considered after time, and we just kept to do it. If you're attached to the
association
in the mind, then it's
the
problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with the point, but you can't say that we're not getting affected by it.
We get affected from the eating, everything that goes in the TV is in the eater, and we get affected by it.
That's why we have to go to mind for a bit later. Very hard not to be. Not that you can't get affected, like Prabhupada did not get affected. But most of us do get affected. Practice, I get affected. I don't even have a non-devotee job. So I get affected just by the little association I get from non-devotees. Any other points?
In general, how do you classify a devotee? Is a devotee not a devotee? Is it initiated or?
What do you think?
anybody comes in the temple, you look at it.
What do you think?
I think initiates it all maybe in shelter.
That already says here on this paper. Why don't you read the paper, then you won't understand. Any other point?
See, Prayagraj, he goes to Vrindavan every year.
Who?
Prayagraj.
Yeah.
And it's that we, when he went there, he was like a black hood. And then when he took off there, and then he became white.
Not in Jindal.
Yeah,
Pavan Sarova.
Okay.
And underground.
Okay. And then he said that he said, I have a country because so many people give my food to their friends. Yes, I come to
the same. Pavan Sarova. At an underground. The lake is still there.
But that's not Jamuna.
Jamuna is in that lake also. Very special. Krishna takes his bath there every day. And actually, because our farm is called Newton Underground, so we have one big dam there, and it's called Pavan Sarova. So if you want, go ahead, they can drive you there, you can take off.
That's it. Yes.
A little cold though.
Well, sometimes I personally see Bhima Krishna, like over here, my frequency is not matching the devotees. And there is, like, so what's the best way to not to commit offense? Maybe associate with that particular devotee that he has, or
with more
so that particular thing
eventually
goes
under the line
or something?
You're saying if that person is a
Kanishtha Adhikari? No, I'm being a
Kanishtha Adhikari.
You're
a Kanishtha Adhikari.
Yes.
So what
are
you saying?
Yeah, but I'm saying like it happens sometimes you are asserting a devotee and with a particular devotee or some particular person, your frequency doesn't match and maybe the way he's saying and the way you're saying, you're not able to understand his words. And he's not able to understand your words. Sometimes it happens to him. So what's the best way to be in that position?
You mean just the two devotees are associating, but they don't get along so well? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Then just maybe don't associate with each other so much, but be respectful in the mind. Just do service for each other, serve each other prasadam. Like that. But just don't associate too closely. It's like sometimes there's certain devotees, we just, myself and them, we just don't get along because we're just different by nature.
Mm.
But in the mind, we should not be offensive to them. You know, we should just think, oh, I'm different to them, like that. And you just offer respect to them, be respectful, and do service for them. But you may not be able to associate so closely with them. Any other point?
Giving up our offenses according to the devil. How does this work? The senior or another leader offends the Krishna.
Yeah, so then there's less reaction, but still there's reaction.
Sometimes basically, you know, the Madhyama may chastise the Krishna Adhikari from the point of view of the spiritual advancement, but instead of taking the description from the right perspective, if the devotee is offended, then the offense is completely
different. Yeah, it can be like that. So you have to be very careful about instruction. Like, it says don't instruct someone if they're not willing to accept your authority.
Mm-hmm.
I know for myself, like, some people they accept my authority, so I give them advice. If they don't accept, then I don't say, you know, try to direct them towards other people who will. Yeah. Because sometimes you give some instruction, but if they're not accepting, then yes, it can be. Yeah, they can develop a negative attitude. So. Any other points? Second offense. What is the second offense? Lila Maya Radhika. Please read that.
To confer the name of Devi Devas, Lord Shiva,
Lord Brahma, to be equal to or in the presence of the name of Lord Vishnu. Lord Krishna has 64 qualities. Lord Narayana has 60 of the 64 qualities. The Jivas have up to 50 of the 64 qualities. The demigods are superior Jivas, but they are still servants of Vishnu. Ignorant people worship the demigods as equal to Lord Vishnu. They say that in the material world, they stay in the material world forever. Ignorant persons argue that because Lord Vishnu is all pervading, he is in the demigod, therefore demigod worship is the same as worshipping Vishnu. This is not supported by scripture. Example is given. If we water the root of a tree, the leaves are nourished. If we water the leaves, the tree dies. Because Kali Yuga is contaminated by impersonalism, people are inclined to demigod worship. Chanting this offense can only avoid liberation, but never Krishna prema. We should never accept prasada offered to demigods by Mayavadi. Remedy. This offense is caused by envy. It can be cleared away by two devotees. To dissolve this offense, one must listen intelligently and chant the holy name when taking on Guru Krishna.
So, as it is mentioned here, in Kali Yuga, because it is contaminated by impersonalism, there is a great tendency, especially these days in India, that people think all the gods are the same. So Prabhupada was very emphatic that we must preach against this kind of misconception. So even in South India, devotees went to South India to preach. South India, Lord Ram is very prominent, very popular. So devotees said to Prabhupada, they wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and they said, Prabhupada, should we emphasize Lord Ram as the Supreme Person? Prabhupada said, no, emphasize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So particularly when we are with people who are demigod worshippers, then we must emphasize, according to the Shastra, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. This misconception has to be given up. Because if people chant the holy name, they chant the Hare Krishna mantra, but if they have this misconception, the best they can get is impersonal liberation. They cannot get the full benefit, the prema dharma. The prema dharma means the benefit of the chanting. They cannot manifest. So it needs to be destroyed. It's ignorance. The Prabhupada, he preached very heavily on this point. We should also preach strongly on this point. Okay. Third offense.
If the prasad is offered to the demigods by Mayavadis, then if we take the prasad in the proper understanding that the demigods are servants and part and parcel of Krishna, that is anything else.
We should not take demigod prasad that is mentioned here. Tamal Krishnamurti was telling a pastime that he went with Prabhupada, and they went to a preaching program, I think, in Kolkata. And Prabhupada was very, in the beginning, like 1970, when the devotees first came with him, there were 30 or 40 devotees from the West. So they were going to different programs. So they went to one program in one life member's house, and then they were offered prasad. And then all the devotees sat down and took. And then Prabhupada, he said, when they offered him the plate, Prabhupada said, oh, no, I'm not feeling well, I will not take. But Tamal Krishnamurti noted that Prabhupada did this, and he knew that Prabhupada was not full or sick, because Prabhupada had not eaten, and you know, like that. So he also didn't eat. So then later on he said to Prabhupada, why didn't you take? And he said, actually in this house, they are Kali worshippers. So I will not take the prasad, which is offered to Kali, or in other words, to a demigod. Vaishnavas, we don't take demigod prasad, devata prasad. We only take Vishnu prasad. So, Prabhupada would not take. But so he didn't offend the person, he let the disciples take. Okay. You know, because Prabhupada was, you know, sensitive. Okay. But he himself would not take. Okay. So we should not compromise this one.
If someone offers to the demigods, saying that the demigods are the same person as Krishna, the demigod accepts
it? The demigod generally will pass it on to Krishna as well. It's like you're a devotee. Like if someone offers you something, you say, is this offered to Krishna? They say, no, this is offered to Krishna. But demigods also have this mentality. I think you have to ask Prabhupada. He did it.
And then he has a hero. They don't give you full prasad, they will be running past by the temple to the mission, he did give prasad. That's not only prasad, they didn't cook that, and so they bought in the shop. So, you know, we take it and put it in the pocket and put it somewhere else.
Depends which temple you're going to.
No, they are on the street and they see the they're passing by the temple, study them.
In
India? Yeah, in Tuesday, Hanuman temple, Krishna temple, it's all the temples in the one temple. So Tuesday they go to Hanuman, Monday they go to Shivji, Shiva. Then they have a prasad bought from a shop. They bought, you know, like the Dalana, they have, they give them 2 feet. So many feet, you see on the company.
I only go to this temple, I don't go.
No, no, you're passing by in the market, you know, doing some shopping.
I don't take it.
Yeah.
I don't take it. It's Krishna Prasad, I take it, it's not Krishna Prasad. Even one time I was in Vrindavan, and it was Kali Puja. So they had big sweets, like, you know, like half this room full of sweets they're offering to Kali. But we didn't take it. They were actually offering it to us. They were making like little bowls and giving it. We just didn't want to cook it. It's Kali Prasad, we don't want to take it.
See, Prabhupada said that they would go to Vrindavan. And when you offer it to them, they offer it to Krishna. So, if they really got an offering to Krishna, why can't you take it?
Because the mentality is not right of the people who are... It means the demigods are demigods, so they understand these things. But at least
they have offered it.
I understand your point. I understand your point, but we don't take it. That's our etiquette. It's called sadacha. We don't take Devi prasad. We just take Krishna prasad. Okay. Third offense. Mahabhaji, can you please read that?
Yeah, I was thinking when we take prasad from Lord Hanuman's temple, Lord Hanuman always offers to Lord Hanuman. Is there any harm to Hanuman?
Yeah, Hanuman's a pure devotee. That's
yeah.
It probably depends on who's offering it also. What the mentality is of that. So. I've said enough. Point is taken. Just say Krishna Prasad. All the rest you can work out. Okay, third offense. You can read.
If the Supreme Lord of the Supreme Master would consider him a mundane personality. A human birth is rare, it must be used for self-realization. In any science, one needs a guru. An intelligent person must find a guru. The guru must be self-realized and fully proficient in spiritual knowledge. He must be able to give Krishna prema. B. A disciple must approach with humility and service and take initiation. Diksha and Shiksha guru must be respected equally. This is the key to spiritual success. Guru must be in disciplined succession and must strictly follow the teaching of the founder acharya. C. The guru must not be judged by an ordinary mortal. He is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. The relationship between guru and disciple is eternal. Before chanting, one should remember one guru and his instructions. Guru, Krishna and Vaishnava must be worshipped equally. Unyielding faith in guru leads to Krishna. Then. Guru and disciple must test each other before initiation.
Little bit.
One we express only part of the and against person.
Oh, no. One who offends one's
one
guru.
One who offends one's guru is expelled from the path of Bhakti and against person. One must give up meditation and repent bitterly. Out of his merciful nature, the guru should be sure to be calling you.
So Haridas Thakur was mentioning here. So we have Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. So we have to offer respect equally to both. So sometimes devotees, they say, this one is my Shiksha Guru, 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 and that one is my Shiksha Guru. But according to Haridas Thakur, the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Guru, they should be respected equally. So if you're not willing to respect equally, then do not call Shiksha Guru. Yeah. Like, if I think of Shiksha Guru, I can think on five, you know, probably on one hand, Shiksha Guru. Like that. Because I have my Diksha Guru, right, who is my principal Shiksha Guru. And then I can think maybe four or five of his godbrothers, or I see on the same level. That's Shiksha Guru. Of course, there are many people who help us, but just be careful that you do not, because I hear devotees all the time saying, oh, this is my Shiksha Guru, that is my Shiksha Guru, but they don't really treat them like Shiksha Guru. You know, Guru, Diksha Guru, and Shiksha Guru should be treated equally, with great respect. So if one is going to call someone Shiksha Guru, then one must treat them the same as a Diksha Guru. That should be the proper tadasha. Okay. Do not disobey the orders of the spiritual master.
Shiksha, this is like my son. I went in this school by myself, I found, you know, in the western area. I didn't have nobody introduced me to me. So for me, who is my Shiksha? No, I have the initiative. Who is the Shiksha Guru? Who is Diksha Guru? Diksha Guru is my guru. But Shiksha Guru, which brought you to the...
Shiksha Guru means someone that you accept their Shiksha. Just like my Diksha Guru is Mahal Krishna Goswami. My principal Shiksha Guru is His Holiness, His Grace Guru Jambu. So I follow their... The point is that if someone is your Shiksha Guru, you have to follow what they tell. If you're not following what they tell, then you're not accepting their Shiksha. That's the point.
I'm not going to temple by myself.
And I don't understand the question. I don't understand it. We can. Just like the Guru Jambu has Gyasa Puja, so then we can celebrate that also. But if we have many Shiksha Gurus, we can also celebrate them. Shiksha Guru is our main connection to Krishna. He's our main Shiksha Guru, but other Shiksha Gurus are there.
We want the lotus feet of spiritual master, Shiksha Guru. But at the same time, we don't wash the feet of the Shiksha Guru. So how we can be equal? I don't understand the point.
Because you can wash. You can wash both of those things. If they'll allow you to do it, then you can wash. The point is that you have to offer them equal respect. That's the point. Because you see what happens in ISKCON. Bhanu Swami has been making this point. Right? Bhaktivedanta Maharaj has been making this point. I've heard Shivram Swami, he makes this point. We place in ISKCON the tendency, up until now, the culture is that we place all the emphasis on one person. Right, but that's not actually our culture. Our culture is offered through respect to our Shiksha Gurus also in the same way. So you should offer the same respect, not just to one person, not just to the Diksha Guru, but also to the Shiksha Gurus. They should be treated with that same respect. It should not be different. That's the point. Okay. Any points? Okay, fourth offense. Amo, you want to read it?
Fourth offense. The blasphemy of the Vedic literature or literature in person for the Vedic version. A. Shastra emanates from Krishna's lips. It is fully transcendent. It can only be understood by Krishna's mercy. Through parampara. Humans are codified, the Vedas are perfect. The Vedas reject karma and jnana. Their conclusion is perfect. The Vedas describe Sambandh, Abhideya and Priyojana Jnana. The chanting of holy names, a devotee realizes all these three types of knowledge. To interpret Shastras is heinous offense. Mayavadis are apradhi. They destroy the natural devotional mood of the Vedas. The Vedas glorify Om and holy name from the beginning to end. if one commits the offense, he must glorify and worship the Shri of Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam will forgive the offender.
Okay, so find your second handout, which will have the next lot of okay. Fifth offense. So Jamuni, you want to
in respect of the fourth offense, it states that if one does not take the initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, it is considered as fourth offense against the Guru. Because the Vedas are full of instructions of approaching a bona fide spiritual master and taking initiation from him. So if one follows the Vedas, if one reads the Vedas, but does not come to this principle, it is considered as blasphemy.
Considering the glories of the holy nature imaginary, this offense is against scriptural injunction. A. Anyone who chants the holy name, whether with faith or neglect, attracts the multiple attention of Krishna. The name is the best of all pratas and the highest meditation. It is the best purifying agent, showering love of Godhead. A thousand names of Vishnu are equal to one name of Rama, and three names of Rama are equal to one name of Krishna. B. Only a hardened atheist thinks the passages of Shruti and Smriti scriptures describing the super excellent qualities of the name contain exaggeration. C. Whoever commits such an abominable offense drops eternally in hell. Simply by nama of our chanting, one gains all the results of karma and jnana. By shuddha nam chanting, one can attain Krishna prema. Remedy. The offender must go humbly to an assembly of Vaishnavas and admit his transgression and beg forgiveness. The Vaishnavas will mercifully deliver the offender from his sins by embracing him.
Mm. So these are the glories of the holy name. That 1,000 names of Vishnu, which means Vishnu, Sahasranam, you can get the same benefit by chanting one name of Ram. Right? And by chanting three names of Ram, you get the benefit of chanting one name of Krishna. Right? So chanting one name of Krishna is equivalent to three names of Ram. One name of Ram is equivalent to 1,000 names of Vishnu. So this is the Siddhanta. So that is the potency of the holy name of Krishna and Ram. So we are chanting every day. Can you imagine how much benefit we get if we learn to chant properly the holy name?
So when we are doing Krishna and us is the same person. I mean, Krishna is our affection and is our wisdom. So when I chant my mantra, it's a quality. I can say it.
You can't commit any of
it. So, when the way it is written, Ram means what? Thousand names of Krishna is equal to one name of Ram.
Thousand names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Ram.
Vishnu is equal to one name of Ram, and the three names of Ram is equal to one
name of Krishna. Yeah. Now you're
past the course. Yeah, but my confusion now is Ram and Krishna. When I do my mantra, I am...
Just chant the tenth.
I visualize the same person.
That's okay. Because Ram is also a name of Krishna. Okay, so.
Yeah, that's what I
do. Okay.
So, Ram is what?
Balram? Like that. Okay, so Ram can mean Balaram.
But here...
Just listen. Okay. Ram can mean Balaram. It can mean Ramachandra. Or it can mean Krishna. Because Krishna is Radha Raman. Okay. So when you chant, according to your bhav or your meditation, you can meditate on Ramachandra, you can meditate on Balaram, or you can meditate on Krishna. So for us, because we're followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we meditate on Krishna.
Because same person was out from one coma in a different hospital, and he said that if not that when you're still Mahamudra, then Krishna and God is the same person, not even to visualize as Ram Sundara. You just visualize Krishna as all affected and with all affected.
No problem.
Both are correct.
Who gave the shaft lesson for this time? Is it the same company or something?
That particular? It might be from Pabandaran. I can't remember. It wouldn't be hard to find that if you just look up at all. That particular one? Is it Padma Purana? It's there, it's at the Vedic Dhamma. I can't remember. We could find it out. Okay. So, Mr. Rupert, would you like to read the next one?
Okay, so performing sinful activity on the strength of the holy name of the Lord. Ignorance is the root of sin. Sin causes suffering. Chanting gradually diminishes sinful propensity and purifies one's consciousness. As taste for chanting increases, the willpower comes to overcome sinful desires. If a devotee accidentally falls down, he does not have to perform atonement or prayaschita. The holy name will purify. If one commits sin from the strength of chanting, this is namapra. One will face untold punishment in the material world and is banished from devotional service forever. Devotees in the Namabhasa stage must be careful of this offense. Remedy? One must search out pure devotees and chant in their association.
Okay. So, sometimes this is mentioned as being the most heinous of all offenses. To commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. Now, we've discussed this in the past time on. Ajamya. That if one realizes that he is committing offense, but then he thinks, no, the holy name will protect me, I can commit sinful activity. If I chant the Hare Krishna mantra, it will atone or it will nullify that sin. That is the greatest offense to Krishna, in one sense, because it means you are treating Krishna just like a doormat. It means you just wipe your dirty feet and then you think you can just go. So, to treat Krishna like that, none of us like to be treated like that. And similarly, Krishna does not like to be treated in such a superficial way. So, if we're committing sinful activity, and then we think that Krishna will just atone for us, that is an offense. And even as mentioned in some places, that is the greatest offense against the holy name.
Okay.
Not if it's premeditated. Not if it's premeditated. If it's an accidental fall down, then it's not this offense. But if it's premeditated, in other words, if you just keep on going and going and doing it.
Okay, and you premeditate in advance that, okay, I'm going to do this, but Krishna will purify me by chance.
Yeah,
okay.
That's an offense. If it's accidental, then there's no offense. I mean, it's an offense, but it's not as serious. But if one keeps doing it, then okay. So read the next offense. You have a short word over here, please.
The only qualification is change. Nothing material can qualify one to chant. Faith means to have complete conviction that the chanting will fulfill all duties. One who does not have faith should not be initiated. A faithless person will disrespect the holy name. The guru of such a person will also have to suffer fall down. A guru should not initiate a faithless person. One who has faith in chanting will get out of the material world. It is the preacher's duty
one should have in sincere people's heart. Only the Guru must only initiate disciples with proper faith, and he must reject unqualified disciples who are devoid of faith.
So we just have to be very careful when we're preaching. If someone does not have faith, then do not preach to that person. Often young devotees make this mistake because they're overly enthusiastic. So you want, just like when I became a new devotee, I used to go on book distribution. So then I came from a Christian background. So every time I met someone who said they're a Christian, I thought it was my duty on behalf of God Almighty to deliver this person. So then they didn't have any faith in Krishna consciousness. But then I would argue with them for half an hour, waste so much time, so many times trying to make them into a devotee. Like that. So then they just begin, because they don't have faith, they begin to commit offences. And then you become implicated because you are causing them to commit offences. So you should not preach to these people. You should just give them the holy name and prasada. And just leave it at that. The devotees should not preach to someone who is faithless. If they don't have faith, don't preach to them. Just give them prasada like that. We have to become mature as devotees. These days I tend not to waste my time. If someone's not interested, then just give them some prasadam. Otherwise, they commit offences, it is your offence, your poison. Okay.
Does it mean that if some people are not sincere, then they
cannot develop? If they're not sincere, they can't
develop what? Okay.
One can nourishes the material concept of the holy name placed in the material world forever. Karma and Dhyana are paths for those who are not fully ready for Bhakti, but they are never equal to Bhakti. Karmis misunderstand the holy name to be a part of a Karma Kanda. Dhyanis think that because the material world is false, so is the holy name. The holy name is both the means and the end of Bhakti. This offense is committed by committing the simple activity of Vaishnava Karama. Remedy, one must associate with pure devotees. One must also serve a Grihastha Vaishnava. This will help develop humility.
So it's very common, especially people coming from Indian background, to think that the chanting is just like a karma kanda. It's like a pious activity. Now you go to the temple, you do your rituals, you chant Hare Krishna, you'll get some punya like that. But this is not the actual result of the chanting. Even when Bhakti Godhead was printed in the 1970s, sometimes there was a section, if you look in some of the old Bhakti Godhead magazines, just inside the front cover there's a section, and different people were there, like someone was a factory worker or a housewife or something, and the person would say, I chant Hare Krishna because it makes me feel peaceful. And the next person would say, I chant Hare Krishna because it reduces my stress at work. So when they showed this back to Godhead to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, no, do not print this. He said, the only reason we chant Hare Krishna is to develop love of God. It is not for some secondary reason. So it is not a fruitive activity. It's not we just chant it to get some punya like that. No, we're developing love for Krishna, we're developing a service attitude towards Krishna. Okay. Ninth offense. Okay, so these last two are extremely important. You can say the first offense is extremely important, the third offense is extremely important. And to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, sometimes that is mentioned as being the most serious offense. Now these two last ones are extremely important for devotees, because these are ones that we tend to commit a lot. So, should we go to the bottom?
Guru devotion only has the last this offense is committed by committing the sinful activity of Vaishnava.
If you commit Vaishnava Parad, then you may lose your taste for chanting, and then you may commit this offense. That might happen. Yeah.
Ninth offense, you should be inadequate while chanting. one may carefully avoid other Nama Pradas, yet still not get a taste from chanting. This is due to inattentive chanting. Negligent chanting causes anarthas to fructify. Inattention is of three kinds. Adusanya or lack of it, resolve in sadhana, jadya or laziness, vikshepa or distraction. Remedy. To gain resolve in sadhana, one should chant a fixed number of rounds with attention. One should gradually increase one's chanting. The attraction for chanting will come. One should chant in the association of advanced devotees. To avoid laziness, one must associate with advanced devotees who do not waste time. Distraction is overcome by absorbing Ekadasi, and the Lord's appearance is absorbed in hearing and chanting.
Okay, so these are Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually mentioned that if one is committing any of the 10 offenses, it is due to this one offense. So you could say, effectively, this is the most important. Or in other words, this is the one that we should work on avoiding. It's being inattentive while chanting. Now, unfortunately, devotees do commit this offense. Devotees tend to chant inattentively. You have to learn to cultivate attention while chanting. In other words, when you chant, you should not be doing other things. Chanting is a meditation, it's a form of dhyana. So when you're chanting, that should be your only activity. Not be doing other activities simultaneously. So, Haridas Thakur says, three types of inattentive chanting. Ordashinya, which means a lack of fixed resolve in sadhana. Sometimes devotees are inattentive to their rounds, chanting properly, or even finishing their rounds. Sometimes devotees get into the habit of not finishing their rounds. Prabhupada said, in the passing of Haridas Thakur in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in his purport, he said, if you are regularly skipping your rounds, or regularly not completing your prescribed number of rounds, you are in a diseased condition of spiritual life. So we should be chanting our 16 rounds attentively every day. We should not be regularly dropping our rounds. And then laziness. We become jadya. Jadya means lazy. And the third one is vikshepa. Vikshepa means distraction. So the remedies are very important. To gain resolve in sadhana, one should chant a fixed number of rounds with attention. One should gradually increase one's chanting. The attraction for chanting will come. So we should learn to chant attentively. Now Haridas Thakur even says in the Harinam Chintamani, that you can blindfold yourself. You know, if you're finding it hard to be attentive while chanting, in other words, just to hear the sound of the holy name, he says you can blindfold yourself. Right? Or you can chant in a dark room. Turn off the lights, go in, like you see in India, they have bhajan kutiyas. It's actually interesting, when I went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house in Mayapur last year, Gauranand Prabhu showed me, I hadn't seen it before, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a very small room under the stairs, and he used to chant his japa in this room. So he would close the doors, a very dark, very small place, and he would chant without distraction. There's nothing in there, except you and the holy name. Burujan Prabhu, he came and stayed at the farm last year after he did one retreat, and he stayed there, and he said, I would like to do an experiment. One day I'd like to come here to the farm without my computer, which means no internet access, and just see what my mind does. Just come here with my bead bag and just chant. So we have to learn to chant. And if we're inattentive while chanting, then we have to get into a situation where there is no distraction. It means you have to blindfold yourself, put yourself in a very solitary place where there's no distraction, and just hear the chanting of the holy name. You don't have to do these things, but Haridas Thakur says you can do these things if you're finding it difficult. But it's good to challenge yourself sometimes. Just go to a very quiet place and just chant and see what your mind does. And learn to become attentive while chanting. Then he says, he says one should chant in the association of advanced devotees. And then for jhajja or laziness, he specifically says, to overcome laziness, one must associate with advanced devotees who do not waste time. So if you're lazy in your chanting, getting your rounds done, chanting properly, you need to associate with advanced devotees. So sometimes you have to find an opportunity to go and associate and chant with advanced devotees and see what is their mood while they are chanting, right? And pick up on the mood of the advanced devotees and learn to chant like them. Right? Just when you look at someone when they're chanting, you can see what their chanting is like. Very much you can see what sort of taste they have for the holy name. Because some people they chant very distractedly, other people chant in a very absorbed fashion. So we should find those devotees who are chanting very deeply, and we should also chant with them and learn how to chant like them. And then he says, distraction or vikshepa is overcome by observing Ekadashi and the Lord's appearance days absorbed in hearing and chanting. So when the appearance days of the Lord come, like we had Gaura Purnima recently. So on Gaura Purnima, practically I didn't do anything but chant all day. We got up in the morning, went to Mangalati. After Mangalati, we chanted our rounds. Then we went to Bhagavatam Pass. Then I went and did my puja. I took a little rest. Then we went out and we did Harina. Right? And then we came back and we chanted more. And then we went to the temple and we did Kirtan. And then there was Abhishek and we did more Kirtan. And there was a class. So practically, by the end of the day, I felt like all I'd done was chanted. And it had a great effect on the consciousness. It purifies the consciousness. So on a Kadashi, and on the appearance days of the Lord, you should just absorb yourself in chanting. Quite often devotees, they ask me, what should we do on the appearance days? What should we do? Jamashtami is coming, Gopanima is coming. So the most prominent advice that we give them is just increase your chanting. Yeah, if it's Jamashtami, chant 64 rounds. Sometimes devotees say, I don't have any service to do. Right? And they go and chant 64 rounds. Just go and sit in the temple and just chant all day. Like that. Unless you have service, then just chant. You should increase your chanting on these holy days. Now the last offense. This one is also very prominent. We all suffer from this. To not have complete faith in chanting the holy name and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. This is caused by identifying with Vana and Ashrama. Only accept that which is favorable to devotional service. Everything one possesses must be used in Krishna's service, the revenue. One should take a vow of poverty and take full shelter of chanting in the association of sadhus. By implementing positively the specific saintly qualities, these apparatus are rendered impossible. Expert sadhana means one will avoid these 10 apparatus. So to not have complete faith in chanting the holy name and to maintain material attachment. So Haridas Thakur says you should take a vow of poverty. What does that mean? It means you should only have the material possessions that you need to perform your Krishna bhakti. Myself and Veda Priya, regularly we go through our house, right? Maybe once a year or twice a year we go through everything. Because nature of Grihastha Ashram is you just accumulate somehow. You know, after every 6 to 12 months, I don't know how it happens, but suddenly the house has more in it than what it did 6 months ago. So every 6 to 12 months we go through, right? We find things that we don't need and then we just distribute that. Keep your life simple, uncluttered, so that you can meditate on Krishna. So don't maintain material attachments. Just have enough to keep your body and your soul together. Of course, as householders, we have to have nice houses because it's preaching. Right? If we live too simply, people come to your house, they won't be attached to Krishna consciousness. But don't become overly attached. Renounce your television. For Krishna's sake. Okay, we'll stop here. Shall we call up Adiki? So tomorrow we'll begin chapter 4, which we hear about the pastime of Daksha. Okay, so please come. Thank you. Then you have to start.